Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet, I climbed down up inside. Choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the rest of this hour, we're going to talk cars. And specifically, if you have a car question, we're going to talk about your car. The easiest way to get on the show is pretty simple. Just give us a call at 602-508-0960. 508-0960, and we'll take care of your car problem, or we'll help you or guide you or give you good advice that is not filtered through any kind of a filter at all. So you're going to get the truth, the whole truth, and we're not here to sell you anything. We're here to help you with your car problems. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. If you have an issue with a transmission, Bob or Greg at Quality Transmission in Tempe is who you need to call. They have many, many years of experience. They don't guess with your money, and they know how to repair your transmissions. It's not the kind of shop that's going to say it's going to cost $300 to $400 to take it apart and do more than 1,000 pieces and then give you a really high quote because they know they got you. That doesn't happen at Quality Transmission. They're located in Tempe on McClintock, just north of University. No matter where you live, they're worth the drive. That's Quality Transmission in Tempe. All right, we're going to go to the phones because Lance called in first, and he's been waiting, so we're going to do that, and then we'll take any other calls. Again, 602-508-0960. Good morning, Lance. How are you this morning?
Hey, how's it going, Mark?
Good, good.
Just outside, engine coils in the line.
Oh, okay.
My wife has me do it even when it's raining, and she said it's like an extra rinse cycle.
Well, you know, there's probably some merit to that, but I'm not going to argue with your wife, Lance.
Well, I never do either. If I want to, you know, be healthy.
That's exactly right.
I just got a question. I got a 99 Dodge Intrepid, and I realize it's not the, you know, the newest or greatest car in the world, but about 4 months ago, I had it idling in the driveway, and it quit running. And the fuel pump is the last thing I mess with on that car, because actually on that car, the fuel pump, the fuel filter, and the pressure regulator is all built in to one unit. And I wanted to, you know, wait till I got to it, but I took the hose off the fuel rail, and I turned it on, and absolutely nothing was coming out, so I...
Oh, did we lose you? Okay. I don't know if I'm... but we seem to have dropped off the call on the ISDN. And let's go to auto... Lance?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Something happened.
No, it's my fault. It's my fault. It's on my end, and I apologize for
that. Oh, that's okay, Mark. It's okay. Just the problem is I changed the fuel pump, and the car runs real good. And it just, every once in a while, it still does it. It won't start, or you know, every once in a while, when it's running, it just quits, and it dies. And I remember the old days where they had vapor lock, and I didn't know if that had anything to do with it. Or
no. No, as a matter of fact, Lance, when you put fuel under pressure from the tank forward, there is no such thing as vapor lock after that. In the old days, in the old cars, we used to suck the fuel out of the tank to the fuel pump up at the engine. And that's the area when it's under vacuum. That's the area where the gasoline turns to a vapor and creates a vapor lock. But when you pressurize the cooling system, vapor locks are a thing of the past ever since about 1996.
Okay.
Now, in your particular case, what you need more than anything else is a wiring diagram for your 99 Intrepid, and you need to determine what happens to the two wires that go to the fuel pump, which is power and ground. Now, it's not uncommon in the 90s for us to take one of those wires and loop it through an oil pressure switch. If the oil pressure switch doesn't see any oil pressure, because it's defective or because there is no oil pressure, it shuts off and it cuts that line, whether it's the power or the ground. You could also have a relay in there, and the relay's job is when you turn the key to the on position, the computer powers up or grounds the relay, then the relay sends power to the fuel pump. Or it could send the ground to the fuel pump because we work off both sides of the circuit. So we're going to switch them. And so that's why it's important for you to find a wiring diagram, and you're going to go from the fuel pump forward until you find battery power, until you find ground. Normally that goes into the computer for the ground. But that would be the first place to start. Now, if it dies and you have a tough time getting it to start and run, then I want you to turn the key on 3 times, and I want you to count to 5 each time. But don't go to the crank position, just go to the on position. So you go on, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, off. And then go back on and do the same thing 3 times. What you're doing is priming the system. Now, I'm not sure that you're right about the fuel pressure regulator being in the tank. Typically, there's a backflow valve at the fuel pressure regulator that prevents the system from emptying back into the tank on the return line. So the backflow valve on the fuel pump could be bad, but I think your fuel pressure regulator is going to be underneath the hood, and that would be something else. The easiest thing to do would be hang a fuel pressure gauge on there, and if you do your own car work, that's one of the most important tools we use today. Get a fuel pressure gauge and hook it up to the Schrader valve, and then monitor the fuel pressure. So when the car dies, you may very well see no fuel pressure. You cycle the key in, and it only goes to 8 or 10 pounds. Well, we need more than that, depending on what fuel injection system you have. We need, on a 2-injector car, probably 6 to 12 pounds, and on a multi-injector car, we're looking at probably 30 to 40 pounds. So those are the important steps that you're kind of missing. But if you didn't change the entire unit in the tank, and you didn't buy the entire sensor and the fuel filter and the sock and everything, there's a good chance that you missed one of the components when you just changed the pump. So that's the best advice I can give you.
Hey, Mark.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, when I was reading my book, because I have a Haynes manual, it said it's one of those kind of fuel tanks that it relieves, you know, the pressure at the pump, you know, instead of having a return line. And the thing about that pump is all three of everything is right there on the same pump. And when I bought a new pump, it was all incorporated. It did have one, I mean, it was doing it before I changed the pump, but it did have one wire, ground wire, that you couldn't hook up because there was no place to hook it up.
Okay. Well, that's what you have to kind of find out. It may very well be that there's a ground wire there, but maybe it's been yanked out of the harness. But you're going to have to deal with that ground wire. Now, what I hear you saying is that this doesn't have a return line, so it doesn't send fuel under pressure forward. It goes through a fuel pressure regulator there, and then it goes back to the tank. So the fuel pressure regulator is kind of like the gate. And so I would, when you were back there at the tank, how many hoses were connected to the top of the tank?
Well, I got lucky because all of them were external where you unhook them, so I didn't have to lower anything, and there was 4.
Okay. Were they all rubber, or was there a couple of them that were steel?
I think only the steel. I think they were either rubber or plastic.
Okay. Because, see, you're going to have one of them is going to be a vent line, and then one of them is going to be pressure, and one of them is going to be return. So you're going to have to find out what those 4 lines represent. Now, if it dies and you can't get it running and you can't develop fuel pressure, if you find the return line, it's typically in rubber somewhere. You can pinch it with a pair of needle nose vice grips with some vacuum hose over the jaws of the needle nose. So you're just pinching rubber to rubber instead of metal to rubber. And then all of a sudden, if it fires right up, you say, okay, well, I've got a problem still back in the tank, or the fuel pressure regulator is stuck wide open. So those are the kind of tests that you would run. Now, a shop would typically charge you less than $100 is my guess. Well, $75. I'm going to open up the door. $75 to $125 to run all these tests for you. Because the real question is why aren't we developing fuel pressure? And I think there's going to be some other components.
Like I said, it was doing it before. Oh, bless you, Gary. With the you know, without the new fuel pump.
Okay. Well, where did you buy the fuel pump, and did it have a name brand on it?
I went to Penny Pincher.
You went to where?
It's called Penny Pinchers.
Okay. Is that a recycling yard?
No, they have brand new parts. It's just over on Van Buren. It's just they seem to be cheaper than everybody else.
Okay.
But it has a warranty. I even called the place that manufactures it, because I was kind of concerned that that ground wire that hooked up to the old pump didn't have anywhere to go on the new one, and they told me that their design now, you don't need that one.
Okay. Well, if that's the case, it should have said it in the directions that were sent to you with the fuel pump, because we replaced a Ford the other day, fuel pump on a motorhome, and it had a new harness that had two extra wires, and one of them was a ground. So the pump sits in the tank, as you know, and it touches a rubber O-ring. So getting a ground to that pump is some kind of difficult if you just assume that the tank is going to ground the sending unit, and the sending unit's going to ground to the tank. The tanks are going to ground to the straps, and the straps are going to ground to the frame. That's a tough call.
Yeah, my tank's busted.
Yeah, which makes it even worse.
That's what I told the guy. It's got to go somewhere.
All right, well, good luck to you, Lance. Thank you very much for calling. All righty. And those of you that have Toyotas, we have two different recalls for Toyotas. Toyota's recalling 680,000 vehicles for two separate recalls. Now, let me explain something. In your airbag system, anytime the airbag light is on, that means the airbag system is down. Same way with ABS. If you have an ABS light on, it means that you don't have anti-lock brakes. It doesn't mean you don't have brakes, because the light is yellow. Yellow means caution. If the light is red and it says brakes, that means you don't have any brakes. But if the light is yellow, it means your ABS is down. That means I see a problem, I don't trust the system, so I'm just going to flip the switch and turn your ABS off. Well, in the airbag, it's the same thing. So Toyota says that they've got an airbag problem where parts of the truck steering wheel may rub against a cable assembly. This could result in the damage to the electrical connection. And once the computer loses that signal, as it sends signal through all the wiring in the car, and it sends it to, and it wants to see a return, or it wants to see a voltage, or it wants to see an amp draw, or wants to see if that there's a ground, then what happens is once this harness gets rubbed on, it's going to disable your airbag, and then that means you're not going to have it with a crash. The other one is, this is funny, that the brake light switch has been assembled with too much silicone grease, which causes the brake light switch not to turn on your brakes, but it also does one other thing. It causes you not to be able to shift out of park. You see, we use the brake light switch to flip the relay to allow you to get it out of park. So when you push on the brake light switch says to the computer, okay, his foot's on the brake, and he puts it in reverse. Well, if that switch is bad, you can't get it out of park, but in your owner's manual, there is a procedure on every car in an emergency where you can get it out of park. It teaches you how to do that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, 508-0960. If you have a car question, give me a call and I'll help you the best I can. My name's Mark Salem. This is 960 The Patriot. We'll be right back right after this. Hop.
Mechanic raised up from under my hood and he shook his head.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and John and Tom, don't go anywhere, because I'm just going to take care of some quick business. I have a list that's 20 years old. Since 1988, I've been in Phoenix on local radio talking about car repair. The number one question was where do I find a new car or a good car repair shop? So I created a list. It's available at marksalem.com. One of the guys on my list is Phoenix Body Works. They were voted as one of the best body shops in Phoenix, and they have been on my best car repair shop list for years and years. Greg May, the owner, and his staff have been servicing the Phoenix area since 1982. Phoenix Body Works offers free computerized estimates and a written lifetime guarantee. As the insurance claim professionals, Phoenix Body Works takes the hassle out of dealing with your insurance company because they do it for you. Their employees are ASE certified, ICAR certified, and he belongs to the Better Business Bureau. You can't do better than Phoenix Body Works. Remember, Arizona law says it's your vehicle and you choose the body shop. So you choose it. Don't let the insurance company do that. If you need a great body shop, call Phoenix Body Works at 623-582-1434. And for those of you that geographically need a location, they're located at 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley Road. Okay, real quick, there was a gentleman that called in about the new Mazda motor. And I want you to call back because I don't know what you're talking about. And I think what you might be talking about is either a hybrid or a crossover, or you might be talking about some variable valve timing, VVT we call it. And so call me back and tell me what we're talking about, and I'd be happy to help you. John, you're up next. John, how can I help you today?
Yeah, Mark, I got a 2006 four-cylinder Chevy Colorado, and I just went over 300,000 miles on it. But it had a check engine light on it for like about a year after I got it, and it comes up like camshaft, crankshaft, sensor, bank one, bank two. And I take it into a couple shops, and they want about 6 hours diagnostic to figure out if it's the timing chain. And at that point, it had about 38,000 miles on it. So now I'm up to 301. I get 31 miles to a gallon because I do all freeway driving, and I don't use any oil. Would you go to the expense of replacing the timing chain, or just drive it for about another year and get another Chevy Colorado, and hopefully they come with a diesel engine?
Okay, I wouldn't do either one. I tell you what I'd do is, how hard is it? Can you pull the spark plugs out of that?
I changed them at 221,000.
Okay, take the spark plugs out of it, put it in neutral, and set the parking brake. Crawl underneath the front of the motor and put a big breaker bar and a socket on that front crankshaft pulley nut, okay? The one that holds a harmonic balancer on. Now, the spark plugs are out of it, so we're not going to build compression. I want you to rotate it clockwise about 8 inches. Now, we're talking at the bottom of the breaker bar. 8 inches over, 8 inches back. You can actually feel the timing chain slop. You can feel it. So it is, if you rotate it, let's say you're going to go clockwise with it. So you're going to push on it, and you're going to rotate it clockwise. And then and you feel good tension there. When you come back counterclockwise, you'll feel the slop in the chain before it engages, and then you'll feel that tension again. I don't want that to be on the, depending on, I'm thinking you're going to use a 12, 14-inch breaker bar. I want the bottom of that to be about 2 or 3 inches of play. That's all.
Okay.
So I would check that. Now, I'd also look at technical service bulletins and see if there's been a problem with the camshaft sensor. I would also, and 6 hours is a crazy number. That's just crazy. If you can't figure that out in an hour and a half, that then another thing too is where would you be best served for this? Who has probably seen this in high mileage Colorados? And the answer is the dealer. So I'm not saying you should go to the dealer. I'm just telling you it's fixable for a lot less than 6 hours. And 6 hours is $600 if you're at $100 an hour.
Yeah, that's why, because they said they wanted to take the valve cover off and see how much slack was in the timing chain.
Well, I just told you how to do that in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's that's just not. What part of town do you live in?
I live in Chandler.
Okay. I, you know, if you live in Chandler, I would think that you, if close by you is Henry Brown, and you go over there and you talk to Mike. He's a service writer that I use, and you say to Mike, "This is what I want. I've got this check engine light, but I'm not. What's the diagnostic fee? I want you to give me a parameter for the diagnostic fee, and then you'll give me an estimate for the part and the replacement of the part." And talk to him. Now, another place you could do. I'm the only closest guy to you. I don't normally tout my own shop, but I'm over at Warner and I-10. And you'll have to call and make an appointment because we're by appointment only, but I'm quite sure that we could tell you what it is. Now, if the check engine light is intermittent, how often does it come on and then how long does it stay off?
Well, the only time I've had it off in the last 5 years is after I replaced the cam sensor, cam actuator, and the crank sensor.
Okay.
I had it off for a good couple days, and then every day for like 3 days in a row, it would almost come on at the same time of the day.
Okay. I think you have to tell the computer that you have those components on. There may be a step where we need to reflash your computer and tell the computer where the crankshaft sensor just gives it position of the crankshaft, but the cam shaft sensor tells it where number one is.
Okay.
So the camshaft sensor is important because if you're going to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you got to know where to start number 1 at. So I wouldn't be a bit surprised that if you took it over to Henry Brown, that they would say to you, "Did you flash it?" And you go, "No." And they said, "Well, we're going to do that first."
Okay.
And what it is we're going to hook up a computer to your car, we're going to go to the internet, and we have a password. It costs thousands of dollars to have access to this annually. I'm saying annually, not daily, but annually. And he's going to plug in your car and he's going to say, update the software on this computer. And then there might be a procedure to say, put it on top dead center so I know exactly where top dead center is. And then they just look down at your timing marks, or they'll put a dial indicator in number one cylinder. So try that first.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Tommy, you're up next. How are you today? Hey, Tommy?
Are you there?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Hey, I got a question for you, Mark. My son's got a 2000 Ford Escort. It's just a point A to point B car, nothing fancy or anything like that. But twice now in the last week, he's driven it, and as he's driving along, it starts to sputter a little bit, and then the power just totally fades, and to where it actually will cut off. Now, problem is, the first time he did this, is I showed up, and I drove it, and it worked fine. But we changed the fuel filter out, and also found out he had a vacuum leak, and we changed out the hose on that. Today, same thing. He's driving down the road, says it starts to, he calls it a knock, but he says it's a soft, you know, kind of a chug. And I think what he's doing is probably sputtering, but he says he loses the power, pulls over, and stops. I show up probably in 15 minutes, fire it up, drive it home, runs, no problems whatsoever.
Okay, those are classic fuel pump symptom problems.
1 minute.
One of the things that I do is I would say to him, I think it might be pinging on him because it's running lean. It's not getting enough fuel. It's got some pre-ignition involved. And he may be right that this thing is knocking people. Pinging and knocking to me is two different things as much as, you know, boys and girls are two different things. But most people don't recognize the difference between knocking and pinging. So it could be pinging because of lack of fuel. Here's the question. If the fuel pump is incapable of giving you pressure, then if you put your foot to the ground and ask it for all the pressure you've got, it's going to die. On the other hand, if you shift it into neutral and take the load off the motor, coast off to the side of the road, it may very well idle there for about 3 minutes and then take off fine, which is the time it takes you to get there.
Right.
And another thing is, let me ask you, well, you stay there, because when we come back, I've got one more question to ask you, and it has to do with your son, where his gas tank level is at most of the time. We'll be right back right after this. Hey, Mark.
The mechanic raised up from under my hood and he shook his head and said, this
well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join us, we have open lines available, 602-508-0960, 508-0960. If you live in Mesa, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're located on the south side of Main, just east of Stapley in Mesa. Thompson's been in business since 1970. They're equipped to handle all major and minor repairs on foreign and domestic cars. They're AAA approved. They are an ASE certified Blue Seal shop, which is, that's the top 10%. And Brian is on the Technic Council for CarQuest. Thompson's Auto Repair was named Business of the Year in 2009 by the Mesa Chamber of Commerce, and I'm very proud of Brian and his wife Thelma, who owns Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa, and they're on my list. Okay, Tommy, we were talking about your son and his Escort. The fuel pump is in the bottom fourth of the tank, and when the fuel pump, it has to be cooled, and it has to be lubricated by the gasoline. It should be no surprise to many of you that the kids at ASU go through fuel pumps like there's no tomorrow, and the reason why is they run off the bottom of their tank, which means the fuel pump is oftentimes exposed, so that means it's not cooled, and it's a spinning electric motor. It's not cooled, and it's not lubricated by the gasoline. So, Tommy, you can do yourself a favor this. Have your son fill up his car and see if the symptoms get worse as he gets from a quarter and lower. If that's the case, I am 99.9% sure you have a fuel pump failure problem. Because now we're going to flood the tank, we're going to cool the pump, and we're going to keep it cool. But if he drives off the last quarter of his tank, then he is a candidate for a fuel pump. The good news is that this is going to be something that's going to be difficult to diagnose, because the shop isn't going to, chances are if you take it to the doctor, it's not going to happen. What you can do, though, is you can either buy or rent a fuel pressure gauge, plug it in, run it through the crack of the hood, tape it to the outside of the windshield. Obviously, he can't leave it there if he goes to school because they'll steal it. But it gives him an opportunity to see what the fuel pressure is when it's right and when it's wrong. A lot of shops do rent out those gauges, and I think they're about $75. And that's pretty much what they cost, so if you keep it, then at least they get another gauge. Well, Tommy, thank you very much. Let's go to Brian. Brian, You're the one with the Mazda motor, and buddy, I don't know what you're talking about. So describe what we've got with the new Mazda.
I guess in 2012, they came out, they're 2.0, and they call it a Sky Active, and supposedly it pushes more air into the motor, which gives it a lot, it's like their hybrid, it gives it a lot better gas mileage. I didn't know if you knew anything about that new motor.
Okay, do you think maybe it's supercharged or turbocharged?
I don't think so.
Okay. It is true that they are working on the air intake. Now, think of your motor as just a big vacuum cleaner. That's all it is. It's just a big vacuum cleaner. We're going to suck lots of air, and as the air goes into the engine, we're going to squirt a little fuel on top of it, and that's it. We're starting to twist the air. We've always tried to cool the air. But when you pack the air into the cylinder, typically use an artificial source to do that, like a supercharger, which is belt-driven, or a turbocharger, which is exhaust-driven. And what that does is if you take a vacuum cleaner and turn it on, it has maybe, 10, 12, 15, 16, 17 pounds of vacuum on it. But if you take a 200-pound air hose and you stick it in the vacuum cleaner nozzle and you pull the trigger, then not only are you sucking air, but you're pushing air, and you can pack the air in a cylinder, which enhances the explosion. So more air, same amount of fuel, but we got lots of oxygen. We're going to pop it hard. But I don't know the answer to that, but I will know next week because I wrote down Sky Active, and I'll figure out what the difference is between that. I can tell you this much, though. I like Mazda. Don't mistake this. That I hate Mazda. That's not true. I like Mazda. The problem with new technology is that historically it's not been very good because they use, oftentimes all manufacturers use new owners as their research and development. And I can point to many, many issues with cars that have been failures the first year and maybe two, but then they've refined it to be a very nice option. So just beware of that and keep on top of, you know, Sky Active reviews on Google.
Okay.
And that'll tell you, you know, what everybody else is saying. All right?
Sounds good.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. All righty. And speaking of gas mileage.
1 minute.
There's some myths out there. Premium gas, you don't need it. And I would say only 5% of the cars out there really need it. And if you don't know, have your wife fill up your car on a Saturday morning and not tell you what she put in it. Of course, you're going to have to fill her car up, too. And see if you can guess. My bet is you can't guess. Gas-saving devices, they're called gizmos. They do nothing but this. They take your money and put it in their pockets. There's nothing out there with magnets or electricity that's going to improve your gas economy. Gas additives, you use those for diagnostic purposes. You don't use them to enhance it. Air filters, that's true. Air conditioning is true. But here's the deal. The brake switch is the most important thing. If I hooked up a horn to your brake pedal, I would increase your fuel economy by half. Because every time you hit the brake, I'm going to blow the horn in your ear. And you'd learn how to coast and do all the things you need to do that you're not doing now. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. We'll be right back after this. Hey. Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday here on KKNT, I'm here helping you with your car questions and car problems. 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock. And any other time you want, you can always email me at mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at marksalem.com. Salem is spelled like the cigarette. For those of you that are older, those of you that are younger, it's Salem, Massachusetts, where the witches were born. And I think that's probably where my sisters were born. I'm not sure, though. I just have never verified that. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Bob and Ellen, who own Larry Harker's Auto in Phoenix. It's a full-serve, family-owned, operated shop located at 38th Avenue Indian School. Larry Harker's Auto is a trusted name for quality and affordable automotive service and maintenance. If you live near 38th Avenue in Indian School, make sure you visit Larry Harker's Auto Repair. I'm proud to recommend the shop. Let me tell you something about the recommendations. More people that apply and are nominated don't make it. And I'll tell you why our list is different than anybody else. First of all, I've got a guarantee you're going to be happy. A monetary guarantee. Number two, I just kicked two shops off. You can go to marksalem.com, click on Best Car Repair, and you can read why. I don't put up with shenanigans. I don't put up with people that play games with pricing. I don't put up with business owners who are unethical. Now, when was the last time you saw one of the other referral networks kick somebody off? So the idea is that I'm serious when I tell you you can go to the shops. Now, if you have your own shop, then stay there. Hopefully you've had some ups and downs, because you'll find out how good your shop is when you have a dispute. But if they've handled you to your complete satisfactions, by all means, stay there. If you're looking for a shop, go to MarkSalem.com. All righty. Let me see what else we got. Oh, real quick, and then, Ted, I'm going to take you, but let me just cover this real quick. We talk about hybrids. We talk about the new electric cars. This article is just phenomenal. Eric Bolling from Fox Business Channel, he got to test drive the new Chevy Volt. 4 days in a row, the fully charged battery only lasted 25 miles before the Volt switched to the reserve gasoline engine. During the period of time, he got 30 miles to the gallon. That included the 25 miles it ran on the battery. So the range with a 9-gallon gas tank is about 270 miles. Now, it's going to take you 4.5 hours to drive 270 miles at 60 miles an hour. But when you get there, you can't turn around and come home, because you have to be there 10 hours to charge the battery. So it's 10 hours to charge the battery, 4.5 there, 4.5 back. You need to know that. Then he says, well, I had to figure out how much it costs to charge the battery. So he figured out how much he pays for kilowatt hour, and then how much the car uses in 10 hours. So it costs $18.56 to charge the battery. Now you divide that by the 25 miles that he got with battery only, and it's 74 cents a mile. Remember that, 74 cents a mile. Let's compare a similar car with a gasoline engine that gets only 32 miles to the gallon. Let's assume that the fuel is about $3.20 a gallon. His cost per mile is 10 cents a mile. 74 cents a mile for the electricity on the Volt, 10 cents a mile for a gasoline. Ugh. The gasoline-powered car costs $15,000, while the Volt costs $46,000. So why would we want to spend three times as much for a car that costs more than seven times as much and takes three times as long to drive? Huh? I'm a Chevrolet guy, but this is what we're talking about, technology. We're just not there yet. We're just not there. If you want to buy a Volt, knock yourself out. But just understand what the good and the bad is. All righty, Ted, what can we do for you today, buddy?
Hi, Mark. I've got a 89 Camaro with a throttle body injection, a 305 engine, and it's often I'll be sitting at a light or something at idle, and it'll just quit.
Okay.
And that's the only time it does that, but, you know, and it'll start right up again.
Okay.
Not the fuel pump, because I've already replaced the fuel pump twice, and it's done this through both of them.
Okay. Well, it was never the fuel pump, because if you think about it, if that, you know, before you put the fuel pumps in, I would have said to you, will this car do 60, 70, 80 miles an hour? And you would have said yes. And then I would have said, well, if it's got enough pressure and volume to run you 70, 80 miles an hour, there's no reason why it would die at idle. So that if it's not a fuel-related issue, and it could be, you have two throttle bodies on there, so you have four big injectors. The holes in those injectors are as big as your garage door, so we're not worrying about them plugged up, but they do electronically fail. If you have a timing light, let it idle, pull the air cleaners off those two TBIs, and point your timing light at the spray and make sure all four look alike. Now, they're going to be spraying like this, but the umbrella and the spray is what you're looking at with the timing light. So you hook your timing light up to number one, number two, number three. I don't care what cylinder you use. I just want it to flash and look at each one of the sprays. Now, it dying and stalling can be one of two things. If the idle air control motor, IAC, if it's never been cleaned, or that passageway's never been cleaned, or the throttle blade's never been cleaned, that would be where I'd go. All I'd need to do is pull the hose off the snorkel, open up the throttle blades, and look inside there, and I could tell you. So can anybody else that's a little salty. So it could be idle air control motor. I wouldn't replace it. I'd clean it first. I'd clean the passageways in and around it, because the idle air control motor, the throttle blades are closed at idle. We want a little bit of air to run through around the edge of the throttle blades. If there's dirt there, it can't get air. So the throttle idle air control motor opens up more. We normally have a 10 to 20 count looking at our scanners. But if you have a 30 count, then that says that the throttle blades are really dirty. It could be an EGR valve. If the EGR valve is trying to open or sticks open, then that will cause it to die. So if you were to unplug the vacuum hose on the EGR valve and plug the hose with an old pencil or a golf tee and drive it that way for maybe a week, or drive it long enough to know for sure it no longer is dying, then I'd pull that EGR valve, check it out, clean it up, put it back on, and if it still did it, I'd replace it. And if you're going to replace it, my suggestion would be is buy a brand that you recognize and not something in a white box. So does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks for the suggestion.
You betcha. Ted, and one other thing. To clean up your throttle blades, check out the idle control problem. It's not going to happen probably when you go into the garage, but you're going to spend less than $100 to check the idle air control motor. Now, we have a harness that we're going to hook to it, and we're just going to go zzz, and we're going to close it, and then zzz, and then we're going to open it, and we're going to see how it sounds, and then we're going to touch it with our right hand and move it with our left hand, the controls, and we will be able to quickly determine whether it's nice and smooth or it's chattering or it's real noisy. So don't go replace those parts because they're kind of expensive, but cleaning them up, looking at them, you'll be able to tell. Thank you very much, Ted. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
You betcha. Let's see what else we got here. Oh, this is something that's kind of important. Those of you with run-flat tires recognize that there is no other tire as expensive as a run-flat. Now, it used to be that if you bought a car with run-flat tires, you had to replace them with run-flat tires. A run-flat tire is 10 times more sturdier than a regular tire because they have to run flat. I remember one time I went out to PIR and I drove a car around the loop and they wouldn't let me go faster than 55 miles an hour, but the guy in front of me was allowed to go faster. I don't think they trusted me to go fast, but anyway, he ended up overcoming the run flat tire and causing it to fail. That's the reason why speed and heat is an issue with run flat tires. You have to slow down and you have to keep them cool. However, Toyota just came out with a technical service bulletin, and when you're replacing, Toyo Tires came out with this. Toyo recommends that run-flat tires be replaced with run-flat tires in order to maintain that run-flat and emergency mobility capabilities of this vehicle. Otherwise, you don't have a spare. Okay, from there, if a customer requests their original run-flats be replaced, it may be permitted so long as the following guidelines are allowed. All run flats have to be done all at the same time. You can't just replace one with a conventional tire. You have to do all of them. So you take all run flats off and put all factory tires or conventional tires back on. The replacement non-run flat tire must not interfere or render inaccurate the tire pressure monitoring system. And typically, they won't. So you can't mix them back and forth. You use the same size, the same load capability, the same speed capability, but you can change the tires. And this bulletin is 2 pages long, and it talks about what you should do and how you should do it. But this is a good thing, because some of you have already walked that path of run-flat tires, and you know how ugly it can get. When it comes to finding an auto repair shop, let me explain to you what's important. It's important that, it's important the shop be open 5 years under the same management, because many of the shops go broke in the first 5 years, and I want to see somebody who's physically capable, financially capable, of lasting 5 years. It's also important that they have ASC-certified technicians. Now, a lot of technicians will say, oh, I used to work next to a guy that was a master tech, and he didn't know one end of a stick, you know, a wrench from the other. I've been a master tech for 30 years. That means that I've passed all 8 automotive tests every 5 years. You have to know the fundamentals of a car in order to get master tech level. I have an L1 rating, which is an advanced engine performance rating, and I've had that for 20 years. So nobody's going to BS me and tell me that ASC tests don't mean. You don't want someone working on your brakes that's not certified in brakes. I've hired lots of young technicians. Some of them had a different way of doing brakes. and some of them did things that weren't really good for your safety. So those are the issues, and that's why you look for ASC certified techs. And ASC Blue Seal Shop says that more than 75% of their techs are masters, and they have all 8 categories covered. My shop, I'm not even going to tell you the name of it, my shop, we've had as many as 100%. Now, there's our assistant parts guy is a master, I'm a master, the shop foreman is a master, and then we have 5 on the floor. So it's pretty important to have that many good heads. Another thing that is, you want to check their Better Business Bureau record. You want somebody with an A, A minus, or A plus. You certainly don't want anybody that doesn't have a record, and you certainly don't want anybody who has a D, an E, an F, or whatever. So those are the important things. And then last but not least, go on and Google reviews. So you could Google ABC Auto reviews and look and see what other people are saying. Look and see how the shop... I would never suggest to you that a shop can go year in and year out without a complaint. My own shop has had 3, 4, 5 complaints over the last 2 years. It's been tough economically. People have expectations sometimes I can't meet. But what pleases me is when I ask the customer to go to the Better Business Bureau and let's let them look at the complaint, most of the time the Better Business Bureau will say, for me anyway, Mark has made an honest effort to make this customer happy and they cannot be made happy, therefore we're going to close the complaint. But 2 different times they said, Mark, we want you to up your offer. We want you to give her all $230 back. I say, okay. So that's what it's all about is who's going to interface for you? What kind of a shop are you dealing with? All the shops on my list at marksalem.com, all of them, have all the insurance necessary. They all have ASC certified technicians. All of them have at least 5 years. Some of them have 20, 30 years. They all have A-plus ratings or A ratings at the Better Business Bureau.
1 minute.
And every single one of them, in 20 years, no one's ever been to an arbitration at the Better Business Bureau, which is they've promised me they'll do. That means if it really gets down to the nuts and bolts of the case, they will agree to what an arbitrator says. That's the final result. You know what? We've never been to our group, 60 shops in Arizona and Phoenix, we've never been to an arbitration at the Better Business Bureau. And see, I use the Better Business Bureau for dispute resolution. I insist that they're members. I insist that they participate if the customer wants to go to arbitration. And if they don't, aren't members, or if they don't participate, I kick them off. So you can't do any better than my list of shops, I promise you. And I'm the only one that puts my money where my mouth is. So if you want to take a look at the shops, take a look at marksalem.com. And the reason why I'm here on the radio talking about cars is to help you have an understanding of what it's like to fix your car. So, I'll see you next Saturday here on 960 The Patriot. God bless you. Wear your seatbelt.